Welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Akakande Makandepwe, also known as Aka. So one of my favorite thing about the podcast is you get to meet different people and have conversations with them with no plan whatsoever of what's going to happen. Of course, I have a plan somehow, but I just love the experience of adding a new member to the podcast family. And this is somebody I actually admire. I don't think he knows this. So when his first book came out, I was at the release date. And if you're Zambian and if you've heard of the University of Zambia, those guys have the energy of a lifetime. I was just like, okay, this is too loud. As a UniLas girl, I'm just like, Lord, the other kids are very loud. But it was such an awesome experience. I was there with my aunt. She was a speaker. And the first book was The Beacon of Hope. And I loved that book. I got it. Again, he doesn't know this. But that's what I love about the podcast. I get to meet people I admire and want to talk to them. With all that being said, today's guest is Water. Hi, Water. How are you?
Hello, Aka. I'm very well, thank you. That's a very interesting intro that I didn't expect. But I'm great. How are you doing?
I am good. It's good to have you here.
It's such a pleasure to be on this podcast as well. I'm really excited for the conversation that we're going to have.
I just saw something you texted. But anyway, one thing, again, it's never curated and you never really know. When you asked me, can you please share the pictures? Can you please share the
pictures?
I've been having that question all week and I felt comfortable enough to say no to you. Weirdly, but I was like, yeah. I am sending those talky notes. You're such an interesting person, by the way.
Yeah.
I've seen you speak. I mean, if we could elect somebody for vibes, the way we elect everybody for vibes in Zambia, I would add you to the list. But it's not just vibes. I also feel like you know what you're talking about. And you know you have the expertise and you're that person you think you are. So when you look back your life, what was the turning point for you?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I really, really am grateful for the words that you've spoken just now. And I think largely, perhaps maybe just to respond to your earlier comment, I think largely it's just direction from God and just being faithful to his promises over my life. But more interestingly, also, it's just been a journey of understanding, being acutely self-conscious. And I think the turning point in my life happened in 2012. I remember the day very, very well. 2012, 13th November, 10:30 hours. That was the turning point of yes, of everything. And from that time, I think I had a very interesting experience that propelled me to be very purpose-oriented in my life. And obviously, at the time, by the time 2012 was ending and then just the years started rolling by, I was getting more clarity on who I needed to be and the kind of impact I needed to leave. And I'm still on that journey, to be honest. And I think we are all on a journey. I always tell people that purpose is not discovered at the destination, but in the journey where your character is built and where clarity is seen. So, yeah, I think I'm just enjoying the journey of consistent self-discovery, but more so also finding my space in this world and seeing how best I can create impact. Yeah.
Wow. How old were you in 2012?
I was.
You're a pretty 16. Young man.
Oh. I was 16 years old. I was 16, yeah? 16? Yes. I was 16 years old in 2012. So that's about 14 years ago. No, not 14, 13 years ago. Why am I making myself old? 13 years ago.
I was
ago.
Doing the mental math too.
Yes, yes. So I'm turning 29 this year.
Ooh, yeah, your last lap before 30.
How imagine. How do I feel about it? Very introspective about it, actually. I feel very introspective. My mind is constantly giving itself existential questions of what would have been and how not to dwell on what would have been, but then also trying to look forward to how I can utilize all my experiences to the benefit of my 30s. So getting all my losses, thinking about all my losses, all my wins, all my experiences, all the challenges, and fueling that to propel me into the next decade of my life.
That's deep. I never get to think about that. I just like, oh, it's my birthday. Moving on. I want to take you back to you at 16 and you getting a little bit of clarity about your purpose. I had a guest I was recording with, and we had an exploring episode where this guest was just has been exploring for the last 8 years. And when she talks about her journey, she's just talking about how she has a spirit of an explorer, and she gets to do different things and says everything you get to do is just a vehicle towards your purpose. It's not your purpose. For example, if I say I am Akakandelwa, and I'm the founder of Transfer Management, right? Transfer Management is just a vehicle I am using. And if it falls apart, I can still build something else.
Yeah.
Towards that purpose. So with your journey, it's been 13 years. What vehicles have you used that have been taking you closer to your purpose?
Okay. So I think it's really, really key for us. I believe in purpose. I believe in destiny. And I believe that everything that we do adds to where we need to be. But the challenge, I think, most often than not that we face is that in as much as this is true, we find ourselves in situations where we assume we are pursuing purpose, but without an end goal. And that has got a very negative effect on how people create success or how they define success. So anyway, 2016. 2012 rather. 2012, I am facing a very interesting situation in my family. So my uncle had just passed away. That is in May 2012. Now, interestingly, 2 days before he passed away, I went to see him at the hospital. And my aunt, his wife, asked me to do something at that moment. I remember very well. She said, Walter, can you pray for your uncle? Maybe God will listen to you. And in that moment, I froze and I didn't know what to do or what to say. 2 days later, my uncle passed away. And, you know, as a teenager, I'm thinking to myself, perhaps maybe if I knew what to do and what to say and how to pray, I would have prayed a prayer that would have healed my uncle. So fast forward the next few months, I started a journey of really knowing, wanting to know how to pray and wanting to really discover God's purpose. Why do people die? Why do I exist? What's the whole meaning of life? So I started reading my Bible individually. And then I had someone who was consistently helping me study the Bible, read the Word. And then finally in November, I started getting a very strong conviction to give my life to Jesus Christ. So I came across a scripture, Romans chapter 10, verse 9, that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. So tears in my eyes at 10:30 in the school hall. It was on a Thursday. At break time, I gave my life to the Lord Jesus Christ as my personal Lord and Savior. 2 days after that, I turn on the television and I'm watching Al Jazeera news. And at that time, I was watching, so I've always been interested in geopolitics. So I see Hamas, which is a terrorist group in Israel, Hamas fighting the Israeli army. And I vowed to myself that day that I I would dedicate this to my life, that this will never happen to Zambia or Africa as long as I live. At that moment, I didn't know what I was saying, but then I said a statement that was going to lead me to understand what my destiny is. And from that moment on, the journey began to who I am today and perhaps who I'll be in future as well. Yeah.
That's nicely put. If I'm being honest, I'm so inspired because I'm like, wow. You know the exact day and time. You know what led to that exact moment and the follow-up and what's guiding your career now for 13 years. You've been, you knew your purpose and probably you've used different vehicles. I'd like to know, how is your purpose? And I know it's aligned, but I just like a breakdown of how migration and governance and youth employment for Andy, making sure that Africa or Zambia doesn't go to war. Like, what's the nitty gritty behind that? Like,
okay. So I think that's a really interesting question, and I'm glad that you asked it. So I think firstly, the first vehicle that I was using to get to my purpose, my destiny, and my pursuit of it is understanding God's purpose for my life. And I made His purpose for my life my purpose for my own life. And that was the first vehicle. And with that experience or conviction, I had to protect my nation and to ensure that it's a prosperous country, it's a prosperous continent. That conviction came and I knew that it was going to break down. So perhaps maybe let me give a little bit of a rundown of how everything is tied. I think existentially, one thing that is clear in people's lives is that as we walk into this journey of life, we constantly find ourselves in different seasons of it. And this is something that I had to really be aware of. As somebody who's 16 years old, what do 16-year-olds do? They are always in school, right? So I was a pupil at that time in my 10th grade. So I knew that my purpose and my pursuit of it at that time had to do with what relevance would I have in the school setting as I prepare for the grander scheme of things. So what I started doing is that I started mentoring the grade eights from the time I was in 10th grade until I was in my 12th grade. Mentoring them in understanding their purpose in God, as well as also personal development and how they were relevant both to the country and to the continent of Africa. Fast forward after that, I was obviously admitted to the University of Zambia, in which I was very active in student politics. I stood for UNZASU in 2019 when I was in my third year. For president, I lost. But then I also contributed to various activities. I remember when meal allowances were just revoked by the then government, we actively advocated for their reinstatement, using obviously the
legal... Did you guys hit the street?
No. I can.
You guys are known for hitting the street, but hey.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Please do not confirm or deny that, hey,
but what,
you are
what
our
I can
people
say
that we love the most.
What I can say is that we did our best to defend the cause of the students at that time. And all this was the training ground. You know, before David killed Goliath, he had to first kill the bear.
Yes.
He has to kill the lion. So I've always seen my life in that particular regard. So anyway, UNZA was my training ground, but I didn't really see it as a training ground because I knew that was the season I was in and I needed to be very present. So I added to the contribution of the students' welfare in that regard. And in my fourth year after losing the election, I went ahead and started my organization, Youth Unite Zambia, whose sole purpose is to fulfill what I wanted to fulfill in 2012, which is to raise the generation of young people for the social, economic, and political transformation of this country. And from Youth Unite Zambia, all other doors opened in my life in regards to the continent of Africa and also globally, as it were. So I wouldn't say it's a complicated purpose or destiny. It's just that sometimes God gives you many gifts to fulfill one purpose. He takes you through many seasons for you to understand exactly where you are and how everything is tied together. So I think in a nutshell, that's what I can say.
I like that. And I like to pick on something you just brought up, which are seasons, right? I don't think we're having enough conversations about seasons. We might be having a lot of conversations about you can have it all. You can have it all early. Also, one thing I feel like the elder generations that are in seats of power, and I don't think they're being honest enough.
Right.
Because they've already, some of them, it took them 20, 25, 30 years to get where they are.
Right.
And the message we're getting now is you can have it all. No, I can't. Right. No one is ever talking about the cost of choosing a specific direction to pursue your purpose or your why as a human being or to start anything new. I think maybe that's the challenge I'm having with the narrative of Zambians is no one is talking about the cost. We always glorify what looks good.
Right.
But then if the older generation, actually, I'm just going to pick on them. If they'll talk about the cost, a lot of young people would actually set realistic goals and actually understand seasons. That if you are a first year student in Zambia, you might not get this and this and this, and that's okay. But ask yourself what you can do at that specific time in that season. So when you look back, what do you think the cost was? What is the cost for the person you have become right now?
Thank you so much for that question. I think fundamentally, there is always a cost in where you need to fulfill purpose and destiny, especially in the context of wanting young people to be part and parcel of societal transformation. I think the first cost that one must always account for in having this grand scheme of a calling is that the thing about purpose is that you need to understand that when you have a cause, the cause has to be greater than who you are as a person. And if that's not the context in which you are functioning, you will always find yourself in situations where you are unable to commit to that. So first, the first cost is the cause greater than myself? And if it's greater than myself, it means it has to be something that you're willing to die for, that you're willing to give up certain pleasures, even legitimate pleasures for.
Yeah.
I think, secondly, aside from that, is also a very deep existential understanding that you cannot be ordinary. You cannot be ordinary, which means that you have to be somebody who's willing to do more work than most. There is this very pervasive attitude that a lot of people have to say, no, sometimes you don't really have to work hard, you have to work smart. There is no person who's ever been successful who's never worked hard. It is impossible. It is a non-factual thing. To say that work smart and don't work hard is just a word salad that has no empirical data. I can give you an example of somebody like Elon Musk. You know, Elon Musk is the richest man in the world, but he works 16 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
16 hours in a day he's working, running his various companies. Of course, he does smart work, but then hard work does not have any substitute. And it's in the same context. If you want to be somebody who pursues purpose with the accuracy that it ought to be pursued, you need to be hardworking. Meaning putting in the work to develop yourself, putting in the work to develop your skill, putting in the work to discover yourself more. So I think, aside from those two, I think the last cost that I would say is that you have to count the cost of the implications of your social structure in your life.
Yes.
Okay. I can tell you this. I work a lot, and my work involves a lot of reading, a lot of writing, a lot of knowing of things. And if I have to be above and beyond my peers, above and beyond the industry, I need to spend more time than everyone else is. I need to put in more work than everyone else is, which means I have to spend less time with the people that I love. And there's always supposed to be a fine balance in understanding your work-life balance. But certain sacrifices need to be made. If you are property of the state, sometimes your family suffers. I'm not yet property of the state because I'm not president yet, but I'm using that analogy to show you that even the greatest family man president he could ever have doesn't have time for his family as he would want to, because he's now property of the state. He's working towards a cause that is greater than his own personal needs. And that has suffered a little bit. And I'm trying to be very realistic with what I'm saying. Interpersonal relations have suffered because of the kind of vision that I've seen I have and how much I need to pour into it. So those are the three things that I can say. The cost sometimes is the people that you love. The cost is also the time that you put in. And the cost is also really getting your own personal desires for a cause that is greater than who you are.
I like that. I liked when you mentioned there's always hard work, even if it's working smart. One thing I realized was you have to work hard, work smart, and be favored, right? Because there's certain rooms you're not in, but your name is being mentioned.
Right.
So you need favor. You need champions. And something happened for me recently. And literally think had nothing to do with me, but I just highly think I was favored or liked enough by a specific individual for me to get that opportunity. So yeah, it's through your hard work and works and working smart that you become very favored. Like others would say, you become very lucky, because the more you work hard, working hard makes you more likely and makes you more happy.
That is true.
Something I also just came to realize and I've been struggling with is the cost my life has towards interpersonal relationships, right? I have a good relationship with my family and friends because everybody in that sector is very busy. So everybody actually knows there's a cost to that. But I also realized that I can hardly maintain a romantic relationship because I am so busy and my life is so, I'm just going to be straight about it. My life is so random that no one I have dated likes how things go from a 0 to a 10. I might have nothing to do to having 2 weeks of travel and everything, and it's so unsustainable, but it's okay for me. And I think this year when I was setting my goals, I set my goals with costs, right?
Yeah.
What's the cost of me doing this? A romantic relationship. What's the cost of me doing this? I'll see less of my family members. What's the cost of me doing this? I can't go hiking. I can't do this. And I see it play out that this week I might need to change a few stuff because there's a cost to everything and I need to go back and explain to say, oh, I can't hang out with you anymore right now. Right. Can I do it because of this and this and this? So it's interesting, to be honest. That's why I'm so passionate about taking the cost, because I've never taken it seriously. Like I've never taken the cost of my lifestyle and the business I run and the life I live.
Yeah.
I'll get deep anxious that I can't meet certain deadlines or I can't go to with certain people because I'm busy. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Counting the cost is a very dynamic topic that I really love to explore, because sometimes it is easier said than done, especially if your life has been socialized in a particular context. You know, as human beings, our neural pathways in our brains develop certain patterns that we tend to get used to, and sometimes counting the cost means substituting those patterns that we're used to begin to count the cost. I'll give you an example. Psychologically speaking, there is what we call the circadian rhythm, which is quite literally the biological clock. So, for example, if you know that every day at 22, 30 hours, you start feeling sleepy, it means your circadian rhythm releases melatonin in your system that causes you to sleep at that time. It is something that you've been used to. And then if you're writing exams during that period, it means you have to study, let's say, up to 24 hours. So counting the cost sometimes means substituting what you would normally be used to. And I think this is a challenge that many people have because they fail to get out of that space where they are comfortable. And it always sounds nice to say, I want to count the cost, I want to carry my cross, but then it has very deep implications on the persona of the person, both with interpersonal relations and also just how your psyche is made up. And many people fall in that regard. You can find someone with a great purpose, great desire, great vision, but when it comes to counting the cost, because of the lack of inner strength to deal with that uncomfortability people form.
That's true. I like that. And because we get used to stuff, we don't realize that when you're uncomfortable, it means you're now starting to grow. So with me, now I know. Now I know when things I get used to stuff and they become routine, I'm not growing. So every year my life is made, I've made my life to, there's always uncomfortability that comes. There's always something I'm going to do that's going to make me really uncomfortable, but by December I'm going to be comfortable by it. And I'm like, I got a hang of this. It means I need to do something. So it's interesting. Thank you so much. I love how you broke down the cost. It's a substitute of something you might get used to and not just the interpersonal relationships, but even just with yourself. It's my key takeaway, to be honest.
Someone once said, one of my favorite personalities of all time once said, discipline is doing what you hate, but doing it like you love it.
Facts. Me half of the time. So I want to get to why you write books, right? You are this amazing human being doing amazing work and sharing yourself with the world. And then you get to write books that inspire people to also share themselves with the world. What inspired you to write Beacon of Hope?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. So my first book, the first book that I wrote, A Beacon of Hope, is sort of my interpretation of what I feel Zambia is supposed to be.
Okay.
And the inspiration around that book came from two particular sources. The first source of that inspiration came from an article I read in 2015, a news item. So in this news item, it was documenting the late missionary that we all know from our high school or history textbooks in our secondary school, which is David Livingstone.
Now, if it's going to be somebody else, I was going to be scared. Because I was like, do I know him? Okay, sorry.
Yes. So it's David Livingstone. Now, interestingly, in 1873, in April, towards the end of April, David Livingstone was unwell. And interestingly, you find out that at that time, he was not even considered to be a successful missionary, as it were, because of his lack of factual evidence about the sources of the River Nile and different expeditions he had that were failures. He is most accredited to be the first non-African to see the Mosio Tunya, but aside from that and staying in Zambia and dying here, he wasn't really accredited with much. But this individual, towards his death, he said something very interesting on the day that he died, and this was recorded by the servant boy who was outside his room. So on 1st May 1873, David Livingstone prayed a prayer. Dying man, very sick, only has a few hours left, with great inspiration, cried out saying, Lord, upon this land where I rest my bedded knees, let it arise to become a mighty Christian nation. Let it be a beacon of hope for the continent of Africa and a light to the rest of the world. A few hours later, he was found dead, kneeling and praying in his room. Now, I started to do a very empirical study on that particular cause, and I realized something. When Kaunda became president, he dedicated this nation to God and was the presiding individual over the church in Zambia. On 29th December 1991, Frederick Chiluba declared Zambia as a Christian nation, and in 2016, Edgar Lungu constitutionalized Zambia as the only country in the world that is a constitutional Christian nation. But then I had an issue. The first prayer of David Livingstone was made manifest. Zambia became a Christian nation. But is Zambia a beacon of hope for the continent of Africa? No. Is it a light to the rest of the world? No. So I started thinking about the governance and economic implications of what that means. So it was an interpretation of understanding how Zambia can be a social, economic, and political powerhouse on the continent of Africa, and a light, a symbol of what it means to be a successful nation to the rest of the world. And that is why I wrote that book. And I started writing that book just after the 2021 general elections. That's where the inspiration came. Say, I need to pen this down, because if one person wants to be immortalized, they need to write, because the book will outlive you. So after 2021 general elections, I started having ideas. And then in 2022, December, I wrote the book and launched it in 2023.
Wow. I feel like then the next book was about that, right? The Borders of the Bridge. Border of the Bridge.
Borders to Bridges.
Yeah, Borders to Bridges, sorry. Because Zambia was declared and constitutionalized as a Christian nation, but you have mentioned that it's not a light and a beacon of hope for other nations, right?
Right.
Border
right.
to Bridges kind of feels like, how do we now start being that light? Am I getting this right? I feel like what's the connection?
So the connection is, and you know, it's very interesting, because sometimes you need to be the answer to the prayer that you are making. So after I wrote A Beacon of Hope, and then I started talking about it, the spoken, various platforms, God opened doors for me to start speaking in the continent. And I started saying, what benefit would it be for me to say that Zambia is the beacon of hope for Africa in spaces that I'm found at continentally? Why don't I become the Zambian who is a beacon of hope for Africa? So in all my representation, when I go out and I do work, I've been to 13 African countries so far, 14 countries outside in total, and I've done work in it. But the bearing of my flag is as a Zambian who should be a beacon of hope for Africa and a light to the world. Out of that light that I'm projecting about what value Zambians can bring to Africa was the writing of Borders to Bridges, Migration and the Dream of African Unity. So that is the connection. So yes, the book is about migration and continental unity, but it is a gift to Africa from Zambia on what Africa is supposed to be. And if you look at the history of Zambia, Zambia housed political parties like ZANU-PF from Zimbabwe or the ANC from South Africa. We housed Jonas Savimbi as he was advocating for the liberation of Angola. We housed, different political leaders, different political movements for this continent to be liberated. This is why Kaunda is one of the most celebrated African leaders, because of the role of Zambia played in continental unity. So this book is also an interpretation of Zambia's relevance to continental unity, though it's a little bit more on the technical side on migration and policy reformation. But the spirit behind it, the vision behind it, is an expression of what Africa is supposed to be.
I love that you see yourself as a gift to the world, like a Zambian, you're a gift to the world and a light. I don't know how you put it, but you put it more smartly than I ever will. So, I like that, and I get where you're coming from. And for you to get to a point where you see yourself as that, right? Because when you want to say, oh, I want Zambia to be a beacon of hope, a light to the whole world, that's a lot of pressure. But you are a beacon of hope, and you are a light. And when you leave Zambia and you go to an African country, you represent us. And when you leave Africa and go to any other continent, you represent us to say you are the light from Africa. And it just changes perspective and the narration of what it meant when David Kaunda said, may this be the beacon of hope and light for other nations. And you just realizing that I am the beacon of hope, and I could be the light. I want to go into that path is so inspiring. I love it so much.
So that's very interesting, and I'm really glad that you even mentioned that last part. I always tell people that we rise together as we uplift others. I can tell you this for a fact. One of the reasons why, as a nation and even perhaps as a continent, we have not gotten to where we need to be in terms of our relevance to the socioeconomic status of the general populace is because of the lack of understanding of where we fit in. One of the things early on in my advocacy work, in my work around policy and things of that nature, is that I understood very well where my strengths are, very well where my weaknesses are. So I knew that for me, in terms of adding a very acutely accurate description of things in terms of oral presentation or perhaps written text, my ability to analyze things and have an oversight perspective over policy contexts is the gift that I have, and I have that to offer. But then I don't have a podcast. I don't have a platform, right? And that is not where my strength is. I don't know if I would have the strength to do that. Because instead of interviewing the interviewer, the interviewee will start interviewing me. Right, but then that's not a gift that I have, but it's a gift that you have.
Yeah.
And it has to be celebrated in equal measure, because society has begun to give a hierarchy on what gifts are more relevant than others. But I see society as a body, as Emile Durkheim, the great sociologist, put it, or was it Max Weber, who said the society is like an organ. Each part of the body has got a role to play, but it all feeds into the health and the growth of the body. And it's the same thing with us Zambians. So I think one thing that we need to start doing is appreciating every work, whether it is somebody who's working as a general worker, whether it is someone who's working in policy, whether it's someone who's working in music and entertainment, whether it's someone who's working in arts, whether it's someone who's working in corporate finance, or even just these young boys who mine at Black Mountain in Kitwe. We all have a role to play in the greater body, in the health and wealth of our nation.
And I like how you've broken it down. So one of the reasons why I do what I do is also like you, but from a different angle, right? I have seen that Africa, we don't harbor any of our data. So most of the things we do are not really our own. Because when you really, for example, if you want to start a business in consulting in Zambia, you can't find, it's rare for you to find so much information about consulting companies in Zambia. The actual trends, not the assumptions of trends, not the textbook trends, but the actual trends. So even if you're trying to get into any market, it's so hard. And as a consultant, I was so frustrated for 2 years. Then my mentor said, we said tweaking my business to say, it's not you trying to figure out how to be the leader in this. Why don't you become the person that puts Africa on a map and start collecting data, that if you go on Google and you search consulting companies in Nigeria, you get the actual consulting companies in Nigeria That's the big five or something. So it's such an interesting work to be in, and you learn so much about the work and yourself. And like you mentioned, we don't really appreciate what other people do. We never see it as a stepping stone as a country, as a nation. We still want to celebrate the other continents more than we celebrate ourselves. So, because we lack unity, is why we are still behind. We don't speak with one voice. It's the others in the east who say, "Yo, us were white. We don't know you guys like that." The others go like, "Yo, us we have greenery. We're out of this conversation." So yeah, I can't wait to see a world where we, as a continent, we speak with one voice and we understand each other and we support each other.
Exactly. I fundamentally agree with you.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast, and I would like to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Okay.
I'm scared, but yeah, sure.
Okay. And this has to be a random question, right?
Yes, or not. It's up to you.
Okay. So, this question that I'll ask you is also in the context of the questions that I've asked myself. What would you say, perhaps in the first 10 years of your life, what was the event or circumstance that contributed to your worldview currently?
My grandfather. My grandfather was a well-learned man. He traveled the world. So every day we had prayer time. Such a Christian house, we always used to pray. And he would teach us songs, he'd tell us how he went to London. There are all these pictures of him in the house. He's late now, may his soul rest in peace. And he would talk about it. You know what I mean? He would talk about how he traveled to London, how he got on a plane. He would talk about how, so he worked in service, right? Security, the Coast Channel service. So he traveled a lot. He was a commissioner. He was like a big guy. So he traveled a lot. He had a broader view of the world. And every day, ever since I was probably one or a baby, we used to pray. He was 18 every night, if they could catch us, because we hated it. Every night, and he'd tell us about all that. He'd teach us all the songs. We would laugh. We knew all, everybody knows those stories. All my cousins do. And I think that made me believe I was meant for more. And since I wasn't a very book smart kid, he would also literally sit down and teach me how to read. Like I learned how to read when I was what, 13? So every day after school, I sit with this old man and I would read him the newspaper. The amount of grace and love I have received from my grandfather. Even his death was such an impact to me, because I don't think anybody has ever loved me to that extent. Has ever given, like, you know when somebody believes in you? Yes, that's that person for me. So a lot of people say, now they say, "Oh my goodness, you used to say, I'll travel the world, I'll do this and I'll do that." And that's the current life I'm living. And with all the success we're having as his grandkids, as his children, we all go back to how he was our lighthouse. Like he's the love of my life, the lighthouse where I'm getting emotional. Where when you listen to this old man speak upon your life, you believe it. And I think when you, I hope everybody, even if you didn't experience it as a child, when you become a parent, be that lighthouse for your child, where you make them believe you are from an ordinary household in Western Province, Mongo. But if you want to be that girl, you can. If you want to travel the world, you can. And I think everything I do, it just goes back to the last 18 years of my life. That month, so even when I made the decision to move to Lusaka, it was a month before he died. And he told me and said, "Aka, I don't think Mongo is your place. I don't think you can grow to become the person you want in this town. I understand why you're leaving." Everybody didn't understand why I was leaving. And my grandfather was not well. So we always had our deep one-to-one deep conversations under the moon, under the sun, whatever. But that day in his living room, he said, "I'll be fine, you can leave." And it breaks my heart to say, if maybe I stayed longer, he wouldn't have died. Or maybe he says, "Do you want me to be closer because of the impact it will have on my life?" But yeah, and that was a crossing point for my life. I was 18. Even now, at 24, I have a crossing point in my life, right? I need to transition. And it goes back to that conversation. Do you think the environment you're in can sustain your growth? Do you think it's ready for a person like you? These are the questions I ask myself when I'm making big transitional decisions, to say, do I actually think this can actually happen in Zambia? Do I actually think the environment is ready for me? Or do I need to leave?
Right.
Come back. So, yeah. My grandfather.
Do you think you need to leave?
Yeah. Yeah, it's him. I love that old man so much. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was deep.
Yes, I just had a follow-up to what you said.
Okay.
You said something interesting at the end. You said sometimes you ask yourself questions on what, looking at it from a utility point of view, what is most beneficial for you to stay or for you to leave the country. Have you come to that conclusion or decision?
I have.
If so, why?
There are not so many places that can have, not so many environments that can have people like you and I. We always have to create those environments, but there's so much resistance towards it.
Right?
Because we're still used to the normal way things should be done. But we're trying to create a new currency.
Right.
Which Zambians or Zambia is not ready for. It's on acceptance. So when you have a product, right? There's the new entry and there's a growth phase and there's the peak and the downfall. We're still at new entry. So maybe something that would take me relatively 5 years to achieve in a different country or less. It's gonna take me 15 years. It's gonna take me 10 to 15 years in Zambia. So what's the cost of that? Right? It's time. And I have these conversations with my mentor where everybody knows. So everybody in my circle, everybody in my family, they are actively saying, for the person we see you to become, it's going to take you longer if you do it here.
It's
And nothing is definite, right? Like nothing, no decision is very definite that it can change. But there's just that reminder that there's a lot of environmental effects that come to it. There's a lot of backlash. There's a lot of things that as an environment we're not ready for. And it seems easier for those that go and come back. Than it is for those that stay. And for those that stay, it takes longer. And we're not having that conversation to say, should I be the one that goes and comes back? Or should I persevere and say, I did it in 15 years when I could just do it in 5 or less? So, it's those questions I ask myself, because even my life is very curated. If I am not with my friends, I'm with my family, I'm at home. Or I'm at an art gallery, I'm hiking, or at an event that aligns with me. So it's I need an environment that sparks me to want to create more. But it's hard to find those environments. And I also want to be associated with the people that are doing what I'm doing. But it's also hard because it feels like the entry is hard. Those circles are really tight-cornered. Compared to other countries, it's not that deep, you know what I mean? So it's like so many factors that if you're a young entrepreneur, you need to curate everything. My mentor, literally, Chidi always says, how do I keep you this energetic? How do we maintain this? Because if we do it, we lose the spark. But then that only happened because I traveled and met my friends from different countries and the environment was conducive. So I like Daniel Priestley's work, because Daniel Priestley's work says the environment is everything. So we need to start, and I'm actively trying to create those environments now, even if I make the decision to transition. I'm trying to make sure I'm helping other people that might not have the opportunities I have. So yeah, it's interesting, to be honest.
I see. That's a very interesting thought. I think I've gotten the answer I was looking for.
I am glad. My last question to you is, what do you look forward to?
This year, or just perhaps just in general?
In general.
Okay. I look forward to being very satisfied with life. And life satisfaction for me is being as close to God than I can ever be.
Yeah.
And seeing this nation fulfilling its destiny.
Yeah.
And seeing Africa become a global powerhouse. For me, the day all these three align, I will sit and say, Lord, I'm ready to come home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. That's so short.
Yeah, no, it's very short.
Thank you so much, Water. I have a lot to think about after this conversation. I have a lot to think about, and I have a lot to look forward to. I have a lot to refine. I have a lot maybe to just search on while I'm still at home. So really, thank you so much for the work you do. I am truly inspired by your work. I see it around, and just being given the opportunity to host you here, I think is amazing, and I'm really grateful. I do not take this lightly.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure. Most conversations that I have are generally around my profession, but not inquisitive towards my inner being. So when I get to have conversations like this, I think they really inspire me and help me to remember that I'm human and that I have to feel. Yes. So no, it's been such a pleasure, and I've had such an amazing time. It's a very refreshing conversation this has been, and I hope the listeners will also learn one or two things from our conversation.
Yeah, I hope they do. I hope, honestly, I wish we told them to get a book. But if you're here, it's okay to re-listen to the episode and just genuinely get a book and write a few stuff and watch out for Water's work. Share it with a friend, share it with another youth. I think it's such an enlightening conversation for a young person in Zambia and Africa and around the world. And as we move forward, I hope we can all just work together and be one team and represent each other well. With that being said, it's been amazing, guys. Thanks for listening to the end, and give us any comments, and please follow our pages. Bye.